hackers prove that even Windows 10S is permeable. Google no longer scans your email and will not include your personal health information in search results. And why you can't go into Mario's secret rooms in the middle of Central Park with the HoloLens. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1796, recorded Friday, June 23rd, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays such a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage just for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we try to do our best. We do our best to tell you what happened in tech today. All the news. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Everything, every last bit, there is not a tech stone left unturned.
That's actually not true. There are a lot of stones unturned. We just didn't want to turn them over, and we won't.
That's true. We left them. We let turned over stones lie.
Like dogs.
Kind of. Let them sleep. For quite a while now, Google has been actively scanning the contents of emails sent and received through Gmail. Did you know this? In order to better equip its ad tracking to deliver targeted ads to customers, Diane Green, SVP of Cloud at Google, was behind a decision to cease ads in Gmail once and for all and stop the scanning of email contents for that purpose. G Suite, which is Google Cloud's paid Office software package, was never exposed to such ads, but still, business customers apparently were confused. They were concerned about the privacy implications as it affected their business. Green says this change makes it unambiguous. Mm-hmm. So hopefully clarifies things instead of having to try and convince them, nah, it's happening over here. It's not happening over here. They're just getting rid of it altogether.
Yeah.
Oh, is that a happy dance?
I did a happy dance, and then I realized they have enough information about us. They're following us. That happy dance quickly turned into a sad dance when I realized they're following us by what we enter into Google search, what websites we go to, what YouTube videos we watch. Oh, I don't know, the places you go using Google Maps, the places you go everywhere because you have an Android phone. So they've got this.
Yep.
And I guess what you call this is optics. Which is a word I don't like to use very often, but I think this is what it is. We want to convince you that we're not really creepily tracking you.
Yeah, and this has been on a long time coming. They've been doing this for a while. There was a court filing in 2013 that said Gmail users have no, where Google was had said Gmail users have no reasonable expectation of confidentiality with email. That was in relation to the NSA mass surveillance discoveries that were happening at the time. Google faced lawsuits related to this scanning and cases involving the handling of student data in 2014. That led to them changing the terms of service that reflected how it was scanning other email for ads, as well as spam and malware detection, but that it was eliminating, it was opting out apps for education accounts. But that also showed that it could be done and they could make this change, but also kind of shows kind of the potential confusion. Some accounts get scanned, some don't. You just never really know. So last year, Judge Lucy Koh in San Francisco, I believe, ordered Google to face a class action lawsuit over the scanning and basically said that scanning for virus and for malware is one thing, but scanning for targeted ads is something entirely different. This seems to be kind of the extension of that. It's just like all of this headache, let's just move beyond it.
Okay, so what if this is the first step in no longer making Gmail free for anyone? What do you think about that? What if this is the first step they're taking that in the future Gmail, there will be no free Gmail?
Oh man, I don't think that happens. I don't see a world where that happens. Okay. Why would they do that?
I mean,
why,
if they're not using it to target us, why are they doing it at all?
Well, I think it's also, I mean, there are plenty of reasons for them to have email. They might not be using it to target you, but it's a great way to keep people using Google services for a lot of other ways and reasons that you do get targeted. I don't know. I think that would be a really big mistake, especially in light of the fact that there are plenty of other alternatives that are free. Like, you'd end up losing a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, a lot of things were free on the internet that aren't free on the internet anymore. Mm. I mean, that seems like cloud storage. There's a lot of things. I mean, you never know. I mean, everything, a lot of the internet started out free and is no longer free.
So then I guess the question then would be, are you okay with them scanning your email if it's a free email account?
I mean, I've been okay with it for 10 years that I've had.
You did the happy dance. You were happy about the news.
I was.
Sometimes you just got to dance, though. So.
I mean, at some point, I want the ability to send a super secret email that Google, doesn't look at.
PGP.
Haven't had that chance yet.
PGP.
PGP, right.
Although we were talking with Nate yesterday about how difficult PGP is to set up. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Well, ZDNet says Microsoft's claim of no known ransomware on Windows 10S does not hold up to testing. It took security researcher Matthew Hickey from Hacker House just over 3 hours to exploit the way Microsoft Word automates tasks in order to create a malicious macro-based Word document. Hickey said that although Windows 10S did present a few more challenges than Windows 10, he was surprised at how easy it was to get in. The researcher circumvented Word's protected view by downloading his malicious Word document from a network share, which Windows sees as a trusted location. Once the content was enabled, the macros could give a hacker access to a shell with administrator privileges where that hacker could turn off anti-malware or anything else that she would want to turn off. So he basically used some social engineering also. So there was a warning up the top that said, enable content. And it was really big and you could, not big, fake big, but big enough. I mean, it wasn't easy. I couldn't do it, but it wasn't hard either.
Yeah. Well, it's possible. I think that's the point, is that no system is completely, capable of fending off any and all attacks. They all have some sort of ability to get in there in some way. Hackers. I would imagine, I'm not a hacker, but I would imagine it's rarely ever easy. And if it's easy, it's quick to be shut down because it's easy. A lot of people flock to it. So they're always looking for things that are difficult to find. And I imagine those are always difficult to discover, as a result. So none of it's easy. As users, I think it's, the responsibility is on us to never actually think that the system we're using is unhackable, because they're all hackable in some way, shape, or form. It's just, are the resources being put in that direction to make that happen? I'm totally guilty of this on Mac OS for years. I've just had in the back of my head, like, oh yeah, it's not like Windows. It's no one targets Mac because of the, there's just not as many people. The market share is lower on Mac. So, what's the point? And it never happens and everything. But that's a very dangerous way to think about it, because then, at some point, inevitably, something could happen and that could affect you.
Yeah. And Microsoft responded to ZDNet and they said their statement still stands. I mean, I wrote security content for a long time for Microsoft, and you always had to say, like, nothing is ever secure.
You know,
it helps, this Windows Defender helps secure your thing, your device. It helps it, it adds to more security. You never said it's secure, because of course someone would be like, oh, is it?
So, check this out.
So they said
crack their knuckles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got this.
No known ransomware. But I mean, that's the thing about ransomware or any kind of virus. Like, it's all, there's always new stuff.
Yeah. And that's the key. Right. Microsoft said on June 8th, no known ransomware works against Windows 10S. As we know, a lot can happen before you even know about it. So, and that's important. They're not making it a definitive statement here. And it's good to know that, even if their marketing materials are touting the security praises of this particular OS, it's important to keep in mind to remember that nothing is perfect. Everything has a hole.
I think we could also take Chumley in our chat room. His advice is get off the internet now.
Well, that's one way. Mm-hmm. Maybe that works for you, Chumley. I don't think that works for us, because then we'd be out of a job. Just Just saying. Media regulators in China have issued tougher restrictions on audio and video streaming services, further tightening rules that already require a special license for broadcasters on those services. Weibo, AC Fun, and iFing.com were specifically called out as allowing programs that, quote, comment on current affairs and spread negative comments, end quote. Weibo, which is one of China's largest social networks, is reportedly working hard trying to parse the vague order to figure out if the license required is required only for media outlets or whether that extends to individuals. They seem to think that it doesn't extend to individuals. So there's some confusion around this, and I think the confusion is somewhat purposeful. It's vague. It's a vague order, and it really, you know, I guess a lot of Weibo's partners, media partners, have been trying to get these licenses. They've been trying to jump through the hoops that are required. They don't know what's required of them in order to do that. They don't hear back. And so as a result, you know, they're kind of banned from offering their comments in this way, and that's a great way to control speech.
Mm-hmm. And Bloomberg said that this is very bad for Weibo, that it like shaves off $1 billion from their value just by making this edict. I really see a comparison. I hope this doesn't offend anyone, between parents and the Chinese government. And I think in this case, because a lot of parents don't know how easy it is to live stream for kids, like, you know, Instagram has a live streaming. Musically lets you live stream. So it's like, you know, parents are, you know, constantly worried about what are my kids, you know, doing on the internet. And they don't know that they're live streaming. I feel like this is the same way with the Chinese government. Like, this happened so fast that these live streaming became so popular. They were like, wait, what? Like, these people are, you know, saying some bad things about us and we're not controlling them enough. So it's like, yeah, parents out there trying to control your kids on the internet, you're like the Chinese government.
Yeah, that's a statement right there. I guess they've had requirements similar to this since 2008. I think the challenge has been very recently. There's so much happening in the audio and video live streaming space. It's way easier to censor text than it is to censor quickly and, you know, swiftly and accurately audio and video content. So a way around that is to make the whole process just very difficult to jump through those hoops, like I said. And in China, live streaming just as an industry is a really big deal. There are a lot of people in China that make their living off of live streaming and receiving tips from viewers. And we're starting to see tips here in the U.S. That's something that's really developed and really mature in the Chinese market. Papa Zhang, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, is one such celebrity, has 44 million followers across multiple platforms, 23 million on Weibo alone. I don't know how much Poppy is making, but I imagine, you know, if they are a celebrity in that world, and, you know, a lot of those celebrities make a lot of money through tipping. So I imagine that's their bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of see it like us. Like, we can say all kinds of stuff, and, you know, people aren't, it's not like journalism. It's not like something that's on the web. Like,
yeah,
you know, nobody listens to us. I can say whatever I want, compare the Chinese government to whoever I want.
We're not getting any tips, though.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, maybe news tips.
And we try not to say. I feel like we are not censored, but, you know, we're a community here. And when we say crazy stuff, we're usually emailed.
Yes, we usually hear from you when we say crazy stuff.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
Google will now scrub private medical information from search results. The company has long claimed to take a hands-off approach when it comes to editing search results. But personal medical information that appears in results will now be removed, along with revenge porn and personal financial data. Google didn't announce the change, but Mark Bergen from Bloomberg spotted the added line on Google's removal policies page, where the company lists what and why they remove information from search results. Now, this is interesting in relation to the last story about the Chinese government and how much they control. I mean, that is why when, you know, you see something like this, the headline is like, Google will now remove personal medical information from search results. Well, they're like, well, thank goodness, why weren't they doing that before? And there's a good reason they weren't doing it before, because every time Google steps in and says, we're going to scrub something from the internet, all of us say, what? Why? How do you have that power? You know, and they're not scrubbing it from the internet. They're scrubbing their search results.
From their index.
Which,
yeah,
rightly so, should make everyone take notice, no matter what it is, no matter if it's revenge porn or anything. Like, yes, I think it's a good idea that my personal medical information doesn't show up in search results. If someone posts it there, like, you know, in terms of revenge or for a mistake or whatever. But do I feel a little uneasy every time I hear about Google being able to scrub their search results? Yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of at odds with itself, right? Like, on one hand, we want an open internet, open in air quotes, whatever open is, and we see Google as being the gateway to that open internet. Show us the unfettered, you know, unfiltered internet, and we will make the decision whether we look at things or not or whatever. At the same time, do I want any of this personal information of mine floating out there? And if I knew it was out there, would I want someone acting that actually had the ability to act as, you know, a barrier for other people to find that information, that highly personal information, social security information, my bank account number, all that kind of stuff? Heck yeah, I'd want that from a personal level. So I don't know. I've kind of, and I understand both sides of the argument, but I also feel like, hey, it's Google. It's Google's property. They can kind of do what they want. And I feel like these are very pro user choices. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, they can do what they want, yes, but they have so much control about what we see. And sure. Yeah, I mean, are there things on the internet that I don't want on the internet about me? Yes, there are. There are things there that I don't want my children seeing, but like, am I going on a rampage to go like, remove that? No, I'm not, because like, I just, you know, it's unfortunate that stuff is out there. But, you know, again, I just hope that it's personal responsibility to look at things and decide what's true, what's not.
Yeah. And I think this announcement specifically with medical information being removed kind of seems to me to be a reaction. I mean, there have been a lot of hacks around medical information. Anthem hack in 2015, 80 million people in a stolen database there. There was a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association that showed 29 million health records were affected by breaches between 2010 and 2013. It's all that information out there. And I mean, when you're talking about that massive trove of information and the potential for that to spread and the power that could and influence that could have over any of those people that are found in those databases, you know, Google's just limiting exposure to that stuff. I think I'm all right with it.
Well, I mean, they're not doing it willy-nilly either. I mean, they have very specific, the questions they ask. Is it a government-issued identification number? Then they'll remove
right.
it. Is it confidential or is it publicly available information? Can it be used for common financial transactions? Can it be used to obtain more information about an individual that would result in financial harm or identity theft? That's the vague question. Like, can it be used to obtain more information about an individual that would result in financial harm or identity theft? Everything on the internet can do that.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Right? Like, every time
you could have put out a tweet that involves, you know, your grandmother's name. And hey, you just happened to, you know, spoil the security question on one of your banking accounts and you didn't realize it.
Right. So, I mean, it's the vagueness that worries me. I mean, I'm not saying like, I just think we should take notice mm-hmm. whenever they do this.
For sure. I would agree. Friday's a great day for a little rumor action. If you thought Samsung might ease up a little bit as it heads into the release season for its big follow-up to last year's fiery Note 7, think again. Noted leaker Evan Blass, or EvLeaks on Twitter, says the Note 8 is expected to retail for around 999 euros when it's unveiled in the latter part of September. That works out to around $900 US, slightly more than the 850 that I paid for, or rather Twit paid for, the Note 7 last year. For that premium price, Evan says to expect a device that is slightly larger than the Galaxy S8 Plus, but includes 6 gigs of RAM, its first phone. No, not its first phone, but its first of the Galaxy S series to do that, 6 gigs of RAM. A dual 12-megapixel camera. Both of them are 12 megapixels on the back. That is a first for Samsung devices. And perhaps most importantly, though, a smaller 3,300 milliamp hour battery is included, down from the Note 7's 3,500 milliamp hour battery. That's important because in all of the post-game reports from Samsung on why, thank you for the fire transition. You've just leveled up, Kevin. In all of that analysis, that was one of the big reasons why they said they were going up in flames, is they had too big a battery and too small an enclosure. Now they're realizing maybe it's better to have a little bit smaller of a battery and not have to recall every single flip-in device.
So it's a lower capacity battery. I mean, how do you feel about that? Does that make you think, eh? You didn't even really get to use your Note 7. It was already...
I got to use it long enough to review it, and then I got the, send it back and we'll give you a new one, and then I got that one. And so, and I actually really liked the Note 7. I have to say, the devices that I review a lot of devices, the Note 7 totally left an impact. It left a mark as far as... like just me thinking it was a really great phone with one horrible thing about it.
It's still in your heart.
It's still in my heart. I still think about it, and it makes me actually very curious and eager to check out the Note 8. Let's just hope they get it right this time. It's what one thing I find interesting, though, is that the Note series used to be set apart from two main things. It was the big device, and it has the S Pen. And now the S8 Plus is 6.2 inches. That's just the regular Galaxy S8 Plus. The Note 8 is 6.3 inches. So it's not setting itself apart by being the big device anymore, because there are other big devices in Samsung's premium flagship category. So, can it survive? Can it still stand out as the S Pen being its added functionality, or with the dual cameras? Like it has to kind of, fight a little bit more to find its place in the catalog.
And I really wonder if it's going to be the, like, no news is bad, no press is bad press. Like, so many more people probably know of the Note phone series than did before. Like, I wonder if people would be like, well, it's probably not going to catch on fire because... they probably fix that, right?
I can already read the hot takes that are going to be taken when it's released. Whether it sells better than the Note 7 or worse than the Note 7, you already know what those hot takes are going to be right now. Mm-hmm. We're months ahead of the release.
Now, was there ever any promise made to Note 7 users or owners for like a discount on the Note 8? Was that ever promised to you?
I don't believe so.
Yeah.
I don't remember hearing about a discount on the Note 8.
You got a discount on the phone that you got right then.
Yes, exactly. You could get your money back. They gave, I think, like a $50 Samsung credit, a $50 or $100. I can't remember what it was for the Samsung store. So you got that. Mm-hmm. But there was nothing like, and we'll give you half off. Note 8, give us a chance, won't you?
Right.
They didn't really do that.
Quick reminder, you can comment on anything we discuss. We love getting your email, tnt@twit.tv, especially when we say the crazy stuff. And of course, subscribe to Tech News Today by going to our show page at twit.tv/TNT. After the break, notaries are going high tech, maybe. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage, the sponsor of this episode. The mortgage experience, sadly, was not keeping up with the times. It was way behind. Catch up, mortgage experience. We need you to catch up. You're so dated. You need client-focused technological revolution. And who would appear with that revolution? Rocket Mortgage gives you all the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home. Homes are expensive. It's scary. You want the right one. Hopefully, you're going to be living in that place for a long time. And you want one that you can afford. You want a mortgage that you can afford. And it's confusing, but it does not have to be confusing. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allows you to fully understand all the details, and then get that confidence that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And it's powerful. So no matter if this is your very first home or if you've been in the home buying process for years and been through every different mortgage broker on the block, Rocket Mortgage will be able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Let them wow you. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that is just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, all you have to do is go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT, which stands for Tech News Today. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Tech News Today. It seems like these days there are fewer and fewer reasons to get up off the couch and go outside. One of the few reasons to get up and go into the world has been to get a document notarized, but maybe not anymore. Joining me to talk about the rise of webcam notaries is Lauren Silverman, health science and tech editor for KERA News in North Texas. Welcome back to the show, Lauren.
Hey, great to be with you.
So I've thought that having to get something notarized was almost as silly as still having to sign my credit card receipt at the grocery store. But after hearing your story, I realized this industry is very serious about what they do, and some of the people are not taking digitization lightly. Tell us a little bit about this story.
Yeah, so it turns out, I was surprised to learn that webcam notarizations is not something that has existed before. You know, you usually ask someone in the office, is anyone a notary? Can I get something signed? Or you have to go to the post office or wherever, because it hasn't been legal to do this online. It's been happening since the days of Shakespeare. But in a few states, including Texas recently, there have been laws that have allowed for webcam notarizations. And it's an issue that has really been controversial among the 4 million notaries that are in the U.S. because they're worried about identification, and they're worried about coercion. So think about if you go and you get something notarized, you aren't going to know if you're the notary. I'm sorry, if you go and get something notarized in person, you can see the person, verify who they are, and also know that they aren't being coerced into signing away a will or a handgun license or a pet or whatever. But if you're on a video cam, you can just see me. You don't know if someone is out of sight or view, potentially holding a gun to my head or threatening me. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. You don't know that someone hasn't threatened me right before I go into the post office to get something notarized either.
Exactly. And that's the reason that the argument doesn't really hold water, but the identification issue is real. It can be hard to verify someone's license or their passport by video cam. So that's why in states like Texas, there's a two-part authentication process. So in addition to showing this ID on the split screen, you also have to run it through a third-party verification and then ask the person knowledge-based questions, the type of questions you get asked if you lose your credit card, like what street did you grow up on? What hospital were you born in? So these are ways that they can further verify someone's identity. And as you might imagine, a lot of people are really into this option because going to a notary is a little bit out of date. It's a little old-fashioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been an interesting in the few times that I've had to find, you know, seek out a notary or whatever. It definitely feels like an industry that could use a little bit of updating. One thing you point out in the article at KiraNews.org, you talk a little bit about potential coercion. It's just not something that I ever considered, but that's actually a really good thing to point out here, because you imagine the confines of, you know, webcam for something like this leave a lot of potential for abuse. Coercion could possibly be one. Let's say the person that is requesting the notarization, you know, there's someone just right outside of the view of the camera that's forcing them to do this. What kind of protections are there for that?
Well, it was interesting when I talked to this one company, Notarize, which is one of their Doc Verify, Notary Cam, Safe Docs. There's a number of these companies that have risen up very recently. And the CEO of Notarize, a co-founder, he said that you could always ask the person to, you know, do a 360 and show the surroundings at the location so that you could have a wider view. Of course, the notary who I spoke with out in California, who's a mobile notary and is very worried about elder abuse and coercion, she said, "Do you really think that they're going to take the camera and show who's under the desk, or take the camera and show the person who's threatening them?" So there's some valid concerns with it. But overall, I think that identification is actually the bigger issue. But it's not, you know, this is something that's going to happen because the major mortgage lenders have already signed on to accept these notarizations.
Hmm. So what about the safety of putting your driver's license over the internet? I mean, what have they said about the security of that?
You mean for if someone was stealing the information or for...
Right, like for the webcam notary.
It's almost like, how do we notarize the notary? How do we know that the notary is legit?
Well, yeah, or just like where you're uploading, you have to show your driver's license on the webcam, right? So like, how does that protect it?
So, it's a split screen. And so the notaries, that if you go through these companies, they're all verified notaries. I'm not sure exactly what their verification process is, but I'm sure they go through the state to make sure that they've actually gone through and passed the exams and are up to date with all the requirements. But yeah, so it's a split screen, and the notary, you see the notary as you're signing the document. They can see you as you're signing it with either your finger or with the mouse, and then they do the equivalent of a notary stamp, except it's digital.
How much does it cost?
Good question. It depends on what state you're in. So I learned while doing this story that it's actually regulated. For example, in the state of Texas, a notary costs, I believe it's $5 or $6 if you go into the post office. Online, though, for web notarizations, they're allowed to charge $25. So it's a bit of a markup, but the convenience factor is pretty big.
And so would you do it next time you needed something to be notarized?
Well, you know, I feel a little bit bad about doing it, because when I went to the post office to get something notarized for this story, the old school way, I know they need the business. So I felt a little bad. But yeah, I think I would do it.
Yeah, I know I said earlier that when I go to the post office, what I meant was I have a post office box at Maureen's Mail Depot in Petaluma. And I feel the same way. She's my notary, and I would continue to give her business.
And how much do you pay?
I don't remember. I haven't gotten anything notarized very often, but it's not very much. And she also, when I get packages and stuff, she sends me a Facebook message. So she is not so low tech.
Wow.
So,
I know. Also, I learned you can get things notarized. Like if a minor wants to get a tattoo, you can get consent, parental consent. You need that notarized. So, you know, there are strange things that we need notaries for still. And I guess we'll see whether people just turn to using their phones or they do the face-to-face.
Okay, I'll remember that when my daughter wants to get a tattoo. So speaking of high-tech people want to continue the low-tech version, you also wrote this great story about baby boxes. After I read it, I kept wanting to say, nobody puts baby in the box, but I didn't come up with the right pun. And I said it anyway. Tell us about baby boxes.
Yeah, so baby boxes, it's an idea that's been around for a really long time. Actually, in Finland, it's been around for 75 years, where moms who have babies at the hospital are given a box as well as goodies inside that they're supposed to use to put their newborn in so that it sleeps in it. Now, it sounds crazy, but the background is one of the main risks that is associated with sudden infant death syndrome is bed sharing. So oftentimes newborns who share beds with parents or who have lots of things in their bed, the soft toys and blankets, it can be a risk for accidental suffocation. So the idea behind the boxes is to promote safe sleep, baby in the room with the parents, but not in the bed, on their back. And the box is a way of educating parents and providing them with something that they can use. Maybe they don't have a crib, so it's another option. And it's something that's taken off here in the U.S. recently. There's a company called the Baby Box Company. It's out of California, but the people who started it are two women from Texas. And they've delivered millions of baby boxes, and they're expanding, launching in states across the country and even in other places across the globe.
I love this story because, like, I've read about smart blankets and, you know, $8,000 smart cribs.
This is low tech.
Yeah, this is.
It's also recyclable when you're done, so that's cool.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us. Again, Lauren is the health science and tech reporter for KERA News in North Texas. She is Lauren Silverwoman on Twitter. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure. Have a good day.
All right, it's feedback time. Sam Abuelsamid, a frequent guest on this show, wrote in. It says, on the topic of Tesla developing its own music streaming service, we talked about this yesterday, I just keep shaking my head in dismay. No streaming service to date has ever been profitable, thanks to the labels taking all the money. Tesla has never proved it can be sustainably profitable, and the situation may get a lot worse after launching the Model 3. Forget streaming, add Android Auto and CarPlay, and focus on making high-quality, reliable cars. I would tend to agree. Like, and we kind of talked about that a little bit yesterday, like struggling to try and find why this is a good idea when it's really not that complicated right now. I mean, maybe sure there are probably ways to clean it up and everything, but I think the companies whose business it is to do this stuff, they're already doing that. And why does Tesla have to do it? I don't know, but maybe we don't know something critical to Elon's plan though. Mm-hmm.
TNT's fan of the day is Phil Barter on Twitter, who sent us this picture saying, "Just hanging and chilling, watching TNT on my Amazon Fire Stick TV." Thank you, Phil. You look very relaxed, and I'm glad that relax you and don't make you tense when we talk about how all your information is being used for evil. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
A computer programmer named Abhishek Singh released a video on YouTube showing how he recreated the first level of the original Super Mario Brothers video game to be played while wearing a Mario costume, which you can kind of see up in the corner there. There he is. This is a video here. So basically, he's wearing the Mario costume and, more importantly, a Microsoft HoloLens. And he tested this out in the middle of New York City's Central Park. So, you know, he probably fit right in. On a long stretch of asphalt in the park, the video shows his view from inside the HoloLens. He reconstructed the level throughout, as well as what everyone else sees while they watch him hop onto little Goombas, punch floating bricks, retrieve magic mushrooms, which it's very possible he had a little too much time with said magic mushrooms. I don't know. But he goes through to the very end. Like, he recreated the entire level. He gets to the end and pulls down the flag and everything. It's just kind of cool.
Did he get arrested at the end or anything?
Not that we see. He makes it to the end of the level and there's no arrest, and then the video fades out. So it's very possible afterwards it happened. But I think that the big downside here, of course, is the fact that you can't actually climb on top of the pipes, you know, to go down to the secret rooms. There's a little bit missing from the fact that you're just limited to the bottom level, the ground level of the game. But mm-hmm. Still very cool.
What happens in the secret rooms?
Well, you can go down in the secret room and get lots of coins.
Oh, okay.
You run and you get the coins.
The secret rooms is just with underground stuff.
Yeah, you go on top of the pipe and you hit down and you go, boop, boop, boop. And then you go in there and go, ba-ding, 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 because there's a bunch of them. And then you go out and you get back to the level.
That's
and you
pretty
get
awesome.
Coins.
I would like to see more videos like that of all the games. Like, I would like to see someone recreate Monument Valley in the middle of Central Park.
Oh, could you imagine? You're limited to the fact that you aren't actually climbing up, you know mm-hmm. what I mean, on things like that. But still, it would be, I don't know. I think there's legs for something like right. this. There's Mario legs.
Yeah, it would be awesome if you could turn on the side, like in Monument Valley. Like, you could get to turn on your
you're
side.
You're walking upside down. Yeah. You're walking through a wall. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Someday. You're shooting high, and I like that.
Yeah, I say 13, 14 years.
Okay, we can pull that off. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
Share your thoughts on the stories we discuss in the TNT subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. Find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you know what really goes on in the Mario secret rooms, please tweet that at me. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. I'm realizing Mario, who's helping out here in the room, might know a little something about that, Megan. So you might want to talk with Mario afterwards. Also, thanks to Kevin for editing and being our technical director du jour. We appreciate it. Thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye, everybody.